I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer reporting from Michigan's Upper Peninsula, not far from Lake Huron. We'll start our journey at Tequamanon Falls State Park, and then we'll head over to the lakeside village of Hessel. Lark Ludlow is the master brewster and owner of Tequamanon Falls Brewery, located within the state park. When Ludlow opened her brewery, it was one of the first brew pubs in the Upper Peninsula. But today, she has plenty of company. Ludlow's brews are so popular, she can't keep up with demand, and some of her seasonal brews have become such the rage that they're now brewed year-round, like her delicious raspberry wheat ale. Afterwards, we'll visit Zach Schrader, program director at La Chenaux Culinary School and Restaurant in Hessel, Michigan. The quaint town of Hessel is situated on the shores of Lake Huron in the far north of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Partly to offer locals an upscale dining venue, along with a means of increasing employment opportunities, Hessel locals came together to fund an upscale dinner house in their small lakefront village of 2,400 year-round residents. During the winter months, the restaurant shutters and converts to a culinary school. But once the summer season arrives and the population swells to more than 10,000 seasonal residents, the restaurant reopens and functions as an incubator for the culinary students while serving the summertime locals' killer gourmet fare. Lark Ludlow, the owner and brewster. I love that. That's the first time I've heard that term. That's a keeper. And what is the name of your brewery? Where are we?
We are at Tequamanon Falls Brewery and Pub at Camp 33 near Paradise, Michigan.
This is way up at the top of the mitten of Michigan, isn't it?
It's even past the mitten.
Past the mitten, wow.
It's over the bridge.
Wow, so we're almost in Canada then.
Well, the next step would be.
So tell us about you. I mean, is your family's from here? Is that how you wound up in this area?
Yes, my grandparents on both sides of my family settled in this part of the country, and my parents were raised in Newberry. My father went into the military. He was a West Point graduate, and I reaped the great fortune of being able to see this beautiful country as I was growing up. Moved 17 times before I went to college and chose to go out east because we hadn't lived in the east. Went to Wells College and then Syracuse University.
What did you study? Why did you go to college, and what did you think you were going to do?
What I thought that I was going to be doing is to be a high school superintendent. And so I studied education, administration, and actually Syracuse University was the first college in the country to give that degree. So it was fun being part of a new program. However, immediately after, I changed my mind and went into the business environment. And for probably 25 years, worked in the human resources field.
You stayed on the East Coast?
And I stayed, it's in the Finger Lakes area of New York State. Auburn, Ithaca, and actually a year in Rochester. Beautiful part of the world.
Something happened, though. You got magnetized back home.
Yeah, just a career change in my mid-40s. And I had the opportunity. I already was an investor in this property. However, the brewery was not here. This building was not here. This was Woods at the time. And I suggested to my brother that we build an additional structure that would provide for indoor dining and also a brewery. At that time, breweries, craft brew was on a very high climb in our country. There weren't so many in Michigan, but now Michigan is one of the leading states in our country with craft brewing.
At the time, you were one of the early birds, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There were two other breweries here the day that I opened, but had I been able to open when I really wanted to, I could have been probably the first.
In the Upper Peninsula?
In the Upper Peninsula, uh-huh. Yeah, yes, in the Upper Peninsula. I refer to myself as a brewster because what we do in craft beer making is we really are emulating our European cousins. And believe it or not, most of the brewers in Europe were women. And most people don't know that, and it's very unlike what has developed in our country. There are a few women brewers. I'm surprised, though, with the opportunity that women have today, that there aren't more in the field, but that is the way it is. So traditionally, the brewers in Europe were called brewsters, and so that's why the name Brewster.
I thought you made it up.
No, I wasn't that clever.
So let's rewind for a moment. What year was it when you won, got interested in beer? I assume you started doing home brew making?
Oh, everybody assumes that I was a home brewer, because that's how most people get started.
So you just jumped right ahead of the line then.
Oh, I did, because what this was, my brother Barrett and I had already started the first building that you see on the property. We had rebuilt that. It's a beautiful gift store, post and beam construction, just like the covered picnic shelters on our deck. And then attached to that is a building where we did over-the-counter food, summer only. The whole operation was seasonal. We did that in 1990. In 96, I suggested that we add this structure and make it indoor dining and the brewery. And that was a business concept for me. It wasn't because I had the expertise. I had never been in restaurant work before. I've never brewed one beer. I just thought it would be a delight for our visitors. And so I just learned to do both.
I have two phrases for you, no fear and gutsy mama.
Hey, thank you.
that's really cool.
Well, it's been quite the adventure. It really has. A lot of hard work, but also very fulfilling.
Behind your shoulder, there are these tall stainless steel tanks. Tell us about what you do here right on site.
I do everything from scratch. We grind our malt. We use no additives, no sugar, natural fruit flavorings when I do a fruit beer. And our most popular one is the blueberry. I did that in conjunction with the Blueberry Festival that's held every year in Paradise on the third weekend in August. And the demand for it became so great that the snowmobilers in the winter said, it's not fair that you don't make it for us. So I'm making it year-round now.
Oh, how cool. And you just thought it would be a little one-off seasonal specialty.
Exactly.
Okay, next in line in popularity that is on your list. And what give us an array of what you do.
I think the false tannin, and I named it that because of the beautiful amber color that it is. The tannin is a natural element, part of the river, and it makes the color of the river, that amber color.
So your beer is an amber, look at that stem, yeah.
Yeah. Comes from the leaching of the hemlock and cedar swamps into the river, and that creates the color.
A little bit more, give us more breadth of the favorite beers that come out of here.
I make a black bear stout. Generally, my beers are on the lighter side, and when I say lighter, I don't mean in body or color, I mean with the hops that are used. People come here from all over the world, and not because solely because we're a brewery or a microbrewery. I mean, many do, but not all of them here. And it's interesting to hear, particularly the Europeans.
That's what I was going to ask. What are the feedback from the Germans, and the Belgians?
Yeah. Well, what's been really wonderful for us is to experience the European visitors who say, this is really good beer. And they like the way it finishes. And for them, it doesn't have to be so hoppy. Hops are great. It's what gives beer its flavor and its aroma. But we do it on the lighter side here.
Interesting. So are all your beers sold on site or do you distribute? Are they in restaurants around the UP and down in Detroit?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm never going to be a distributor. Everything's brewed on site and sold on site. But with the influx of people here in the summer, I'm not even able to serve growlers. We just can only serve our luncheon guests or people can take a beer out on the deck.
And you're sold out after
that. We're sold out. As a matter of fact, as we're talking here today, this evening, I'll be out of two beers.
Mm-hmm. So what does that tell you in your mind going forward? To get bigger or to be stubborn and stay the size you're at?
Well, I want to be stubborn, but I don't know if that's a viable alternative.
Part of that is just limited, probably physical space and your mental time, body capacity in 24 hours.
Absolutely. I feel really badly when I'm disappointing a customer that's waited an hour and a half in line and they can't take a growler home when they've been used to doing it. It makes me feel very sad because the expectation is so high, but I can't help it. We've brewed more than we have ever brewed, and we can't do more. The beer has to ferment, you know. We're also maxed out on the property lines with the state park property. And so if something were to be done, it'd have to be done on another site.
Pretty cool. Did you imagine in your mind when you started this venture as a brewster that it would be so successful?
No. Not to this extent. I just, in my mind, I wanted it to be a cozy, friendly place where we could give everyone special attention. And it's grown into far more than that.
Okay, one more before we go. The breadth of the beers that you make, the different names and styles and characters.
Okay. I make a lumberjack lager, and that's limited to winter because of the fermentation time, 5 to 6 weeks, whereas an ale only takes 2 to 3 weeks, depending. And so I make mostly ales. So I have the Falls Tan, and that's the ale. I have a harvest wheat, and then sometimes I flavor that wheat base with the blueberry, a raspberry, or a peach. A peach is what we have on tap here today.
These are real Michigan peaches.
Oh, sure. Actually, it's a natural product, but it's made for brewers, because I just can't imagine me with the time limitations that I have right now trying to determine how many peaches I need for my 10 barrels of beer.
See, this is where the elves come in.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just trying to think. The pale ale. That's it. That's the rotation.
Good. You kept it under control then.
Yes.
And did you ever think when you started your venture that it would be this successful?
I do have to say that location, just like in real estate, means everything. And the inspiration for doing all this is this location. I knew that we would have an audience.
Yeah, the walk-by, walk-in people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I knew we'd be busy. I didn't think we'd be quite this busy.
That's so cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing, Lark. What a great, pleasant treat to meet you today.
Oh, thank you. And it's equally as pleasant for me to have you as our guest.
Well, I'm excited to test out one of your beers here.
All right.
Yeah. We've been speaking with Lark Ludlow, the owner and brewster at Taquamenon Falls Brewery and Pub at Camp 33 in the Upper Peninsula where the Oopers live. Yeah.
Hey, yeah.
All right.
Zach Schrader.
My name is Zach with the Lachenal Culinary School. We're in the northern peninsula of Michigan. Hessel, to be exact, is a small town.
Very small town, isn't it?
Yeah, 200 people in the winter, and then upwards of 10,000 in the summer. Great business idea by a group of our investors to operate as a school in the winter when we'd normally be closed in this facility. And then in the summer, we open up as an internship facility and a restaurant to the local community.
One of the byproducts or benefits of operating throughout the wintertime, obviously, is employment for locals, right?
In the wintertime, we employ a few local residents, and in the summer, we employ a whole lot, 20 to 30 to be exact, yeah.
But you're only open as a restaurant during the summer season.
Yeah, other than we do a few special events in the winter, but for the most part, just in the summer.
Let's talk food philosophy, sourcing, sure. Locavore.
Well, to me, it's one extra step to purchase directly from the person that produced this food. But you get to develop that relationship. They get a feel for what you're looking for. And not only that, but you get a unique product in the end.
And from your standpoint, you know you're out in the growing ground. You know where it's grown and how it's grown, right?
Yeah, well, the UP is really an untapped resource for good produce and good farming in general. And so I've been lucky enough the last 3 years to go out there and make these relationships and develop these products. And I think I just see our food scene going upwards.
Tell us about some of the products that you think are most exceptional that are locally grown.
Sure. I bought upwards of 200 ducks this summer from a local farmer, and I've never seen ducks that had quite the color of fat on it. And to a chef, the color of the fat on the duck means they're eating good. So this is really nice yellow fat and very quality product, as well as a lot of our produce. It's funny that when I first started doing this, the produce wasn't the best produce I'd ever got, but now we're starting to see that the farmers are really clicking with me and with the other chefs in the area, and you're seeing a really unique product coming out of our area.
So part of it is kind of a learning curve on both ends. where you're showing them what you need and what you want, and they're responding?
Exactly. Well, that's the difference from buying from one of the big guys, is I get to be one-on-one with the person that's actually producing this product, and I get to really get into their mind, and they get to get into my mind, and we get to come up with a totally different product than you can just buy on a store shelf.
Because of your philosophy, because of your demands of what you need for product, are you spurring or stimulating growth among the growers?
Sure. Within the last 2 years, we've bought upwards of $100,000 worth of local product into an area this small. That's a ton being pumped right back into the economy. And those are the people that I see in the restaurant in the summer spending money. So it comes full circle.
Sustainable really doesn't mean anything anymore.
Sure.
But
sure.
Organic does. And I personally don't believe that it has to be certified as much as philosophically organic. Talk to us about that level.
You're exactly right. We don't purchase from any certified organic companies. There might be a few that trickle in, but for the most part, it's local farmers. There's no way they could, one, figure out the whole process to become certified organic, but two, afford it. So rather, that's why I'm out there in the fields with them multiple times a year talking about what chemicals they're using and what fertilizers, and for the most part, it's none.
That's pretty critical, operating a restaurant and a culinary school on the level that you do.
Yeah, that's very critical, and that's what our focus is we put the product first, and we do as little as we can to a product to make the flavor stand out, and so that's why you see us being a little bit different than other culinary schools. We're not trying to do anything over-the-top extravagant. All we're trying to do is show these students how to take a product and make it into something that is extraordinary without doing too much to it.
Talk to us for a moment about your philosophy within your culinary school. You know, what are the roots of what you're trying to teach?
Sure. Well, when we were talking about farmers, what I do is I meet with a farmer, figure out what they grow best, and then we take French techniques and we try to do as little as possible, like I said, to those ingredients and make them come out. So you might see some other influences in our food, but it's all French techniques. And that's what I train with. The students are only here for 1 year, so I try to teach them techniques rather than recipes, because there's no way I'd have time to give them every recipe in the book.
So it's more attitude and how you approach food and cooking.
Exactly. It's understanding what way that product can be cooked the best. And there may be multiple ways, but I want the students to know what technique really helps that product the best.
And reductions?
Reduction sauces. Oh, yeah, we do a lot of reduction sauces. Now, I don't roux as often as your classical French schools do. Rather than I do reductions.
And anything else you want to add?
I will tell you that living up here in the north, I grew up and was born and raised here. There's not as many people up here. But the one thing that I love is that I can go out into nature and see food all around me.
And pick it and eat it.
Sure, definitely.
And right out front is the water, so you have a lot of fresh fish.
Oh, yes, we source almost all of our fish right here from the Great Lakes, and not only right here from the Great Lakes, but from 20 minutes down the road, I visit the fish market almost every other morning in the summer. So, my name is Zach Schrader. I'm with the Les Chenaux Culinary School. You can find us at lcculinary.org or on Facebook or Instagram, Les Chenaux Culinary School.
Zach, thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you. You have a wonderful day.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Michigan.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com. Our associate producers from the San Francisco Bay Area include Molly Blaisdell, Lori King, and Susie Rodriguez. Melissa Corbin from Tennessee, Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, Rebecca Bingham, Hot Springs, Arkansas, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.